From Bite High No Limit comes Bob Pape's Deadlights, the podcast about curious, forgotten and unusual films. In this episode, we have two films about immortality, one about death, and one huge turkey. Or it could be a bird, but we don't quite know yet. So, Deadlights is the curious, forgotten and unusual in film and video, as per your book.
It certainly is, yes.
And it's been an absolute brilliant opportunity to discuss a few of the highlights of the films.
So, highlights.
Well, deadlights. Deadlights of the film. So today we want to we've both viewed and four films.
He Never Died. I Woke Up Early the Day I Died. The Giant Claw. Oh. I see that one has struck a nerve. And 12:01 PM. Just to give you the background, I don't know if I did before, Deadlights was a free piece of paper I gave away. It was an A4 sheet of paper I printed up my own reviews and bits and pieces of and gave away for free here in Swansea. And that was back in 2019. And so as I said, the idea really is just to get people to watch them. Because, you know, now I'd say nowadays everybody can be an expert online. You just have to type the name of a film into IMDb or into Wikipedia, and you've got all the information you need there. And you know, someone asked me about that, and I said, look, there's a couple of great books of films on Hammer Films by, I think it's Wayne Kinsey, and they go into incredible detail about it. And you can find out, and I'm not kidding, you can find out the name of the canteen lady, you know, when they were in Bray or whatever. And you can also find out what the menu was, what they liked to, well, you know, Monday, it was corned beef pie or something like that. And how can you compete? How can anyone compete with that unless you've got full and restricted access to records? And if you pick that up and write that in your own review, that's not your information. It's just somebody else's. You're just copying, you know, it's called reference material, but, you know, in these days of AI and everything, it all gets chewed up and spat back out, and it's not original. You're just basically, you know, telling people what someone else has said. So what is the point of that? Why not say, don't listen to me, go back to the original. So what with Deadlights, the idea is just to watch the films and talk about them and pick up a little bit of background detail, maybe go off on a tangent here and there. But it's really not a case of, you know, this was made in this year by the director and the producer and the gaffer and the lighting technician and blah, blah, blah. So hopefully it'll be a bit more personal. And
absolutely.
I'd kind of like to know what you thought about some of the films as well, to come into them cold. So,
well, yeah, this is the thing that I really like about it, because I'd never have seen those four films unless I'd spoke to you previously, Bob. So it's really good. And I think, you know, what we're trying to achieve is something a bit organic, really, isn't it? I think rather than telling people, you know, what to think, I mean, you know, just going out and looking at these curious films and, you know, just enjoying them for what they are.
There will be mistakes because I'm going by my memory. I'm not going to sort of stop everything and go, hang on while I look up this quote, you know. So first quote, which may or may not be true, may not be the right attribute, is from, I think it's Akira Kurosawa, you know, along the lines of, you know, to appreciate the good, you have to see the bad. And that applies to everything more than films. It probably wasn't Akira Kurosawa, it's probably someone like Samuel Goldwyn or something, but that's the kind of approach I'm going for with Deadlights. It may not be right, but you know, and I said in another book, and as someone more famous than me once said, you know, I'm playing all the right notes, not necessarily in the right order.
I always try and get at least a couple of three things wrong in every podcast I make. So, you know, let's keep the tradition going.
It gives people a reason to get in touch, doesn't it?
Oh, absolutely. And I'll be welcoming any comments and all that coming along on this because
Yeah.
if we make this and you like it, you know what? We'll just keep making more, you know,
Oh my God, is there enough
if
films out there? I don't know. All right, so let's get stuck into them. Should we start? I don't know. Let's start with the shortest film out there, which is it's barely half an hour. It's 12:01 p.m. It's a short film from 1990, based on a short story which first came out in the 1970s. If you've seen, oh, what should we say? If you've seen Groundhog Day, where you've got the day repeating, that's like a standard trope or standard idea that's used. You know, it's been used in a lot of films, that the idea, especially horror films, where you get to the end of a film and you wake up, and the day starts again. You know, the classic was Dead of Night, and you know, something like Invaders from Mars, where you know it was all a dream, or was it? You know, so that idea that the day repeats and you're kind of trapped in that day forever or for whenever. It's been seen before, but I think with 12:01 p.m., it's the first one I think I know that there is a repeat, and it's not a day. It's only 59 minutes. But after that, the person remembers what went before. It's not brand new to them. It's not, oh, you know, I was saying Dead of Night, the idea that a man has to go to the country house because he has a premonition. And at the end, something happens. And then he wakes up and, oh, and his wife says, oh, you know, where are you going? Oh, I've got to go to the country house. And he doesn't learn from it. But now, the basic behind 12:01 is a man, the film starts, a man is standing next to heavy traffic. And over the next few minutes, he reveals to people that he's lived the day before many, many times. But it's not a day, it's only 59 minutes. And that at 1 o'clock, something happens and he immediately jumps back. So he just spends 59 minutes repeating over and over again. But he remembers it. So during the course of this short 30-minute film, you find out more and more about what's going on until in the end, I mean, I just quick side here, spoilers. I will not sort of go into some films because I think you deserve to find out for yourself. I will show, you know, go into the ending of others because it's a whole reason for the film. And in 12:01 p.m., it's what it is. It's a MacGuffin, which is the, you know, Hitchcock plot, that it's a device that has real no meaning on the film other than to be there to make the film, you know, go along. And the MacGuffin in this is that a matter and antimatter universes are colliding and they're causing a time bounce. And this time bounce is oblivious to everyone and it only lasts 50, an hour, 59 minutes. But our hero is the only person on Earth who's aware of the time bounce. And in the end, he realizes that this is going to go on forever, for infinity. It's never going to stop. It just won't stop. And it's a, I don't know, it's a bleak ending. There is something else to the ending that you can see for yourself, but it is a bleak ending. It's not Groundhog Day. Now, Groundhog Day 3 years later, whether they saw this film or saw the idea or someone worked on the same principle, that is a film about redemption. You know, Bill Murray is a character in Groundhog Day who starts off unlikable by his everyone else. And he only sort of escapes out of his everyday, this Groundhog Day, by becoming nice. You know, it's a happy ending. And it's like, oh, great, you know, hooray, hooray, let's go on with the film. I don't know, 12:01, just you watch it and you when it's over, you can't help thinking, my God, what the hell's gonna happen to this man? Because 59 minutes, what could he do in 59 minutes? You know, if you've got a day, you can do something. In Bill Murray's case, he learned the piano. But in 12:01 p.m., our hero, who's actor by the name of Kurtwood Smith, he's one of those characters you know his face. And it, you think, where was he? And I'll give you a clue. You may know him as Clarence Bodiger in
Certainly
RoboCop.
do. That's where I
You know,
recognized him straight away, and it was
sayonara, RoboCop.
and that was the thing that really I didn't think I'd ever feel sorry for Clarence Boddicker. I really liked him in this film, the 1201. Certainly, and he's a very charming man. And in fact, without giving too much away, he's I think the arc could probably his personality sort of plummets with the with as the film goes on, as he tries things and gets more disillusioned.
Well, it's more real because, you know, with other films now, I'm using Groundhog Day, but you've got, you know, more stuff up today like Happy Death Day, or Happy Death Day to You, or it's been on a few. There's an S Stargate SG-1 episode. There's probably a Star Trek episode. The idea that the day repeats, and you. The person trapped in it, or the people trapped in it, they know it's repeating and they've got to do something else. The Final Girls, where they're trapped in a film, the film lasts 90 minutes and then the film kind of restarts again. And but they're trapped for 90 minutes in a film. It doesn't kind of explore the fact that, you know, at what point after the same 59, you know, living 59 minutes is great. Yeah, Dave, I'll do it two or three times, do it five times, 10 times, 50 times, 100 times, 1,000. How many times? And at what point do you just go insane? You can't, what, how do you stop it? You can't. There is no stop to it. It's just infinity stretching out in front of you forever. And you know that. You know you're trapped in it, you
Yeah,
know.
it's, yeah. I think a few things that crossed my mind about it was the there's a stage in the film, and it's of course it's only a short film, but there's various different stages in it that I noted, and there's a bit that I sort of emphasized with was if you ever playing a computer game and you had an infinite lives poke. And you needed to get past a particular thing, and you just kept dying and dying and dying until you realized to that you learned the pattern to get past something. And that was something that I sort of picked up in the film, that there was a part in there where he was failing multiple times to get past, and he just didn't care at certain junctures, and you could really understand why he wasn't caring. And I thought the way the film was shot as well, it was I'm not sure, was it actually a TV movie bubble, was it sort of like a cinematic release?
Was a TV short, really. It was remade as a TV movie a short time later. Same plot, but they expanded it. It was still called 12:01 p.m. but now it lasts for, the bounce isn't 59 minutes, it is 24 hours. And it, I haven't seen that one, but it is supposed to have a happy ending, because, you know, why would he sit watch a film for 90 minutes that didn't have a happy ending? No. Let's go back to this Groundhog Day thing again. You know, it's got to be redemption. Boss, I don't know. There's a new film, Boss Level. Have you seen that?
Oh, right. I'm not seeing Boss Level, no.
Oh, that similar thing. A guy is trapped into an infinite loop. Only he realizes that it's changing, but he's got to stop people trying to kill him. And he tries to save his wife, but again, that's got, actually, funnily enough, that's got two different endings. Whether depending whether you watch it in Europe or whether you watch it on TV in America.
Oh, what is that?
Yeah, the American one has a well, the British one has the ending cut short. He sort of goes and does one last time loop, shall we call it, or is about to do one last time loop, and we don't know whether it succeeds or not. It's left. And in, I think in the American version, there's a bit more information that it maybe will work. It's
Ah.
not absolute, it's only a few seconds, but it does slightly change the ending of the film.
It's also like a Blade Runner ending where there's exposition in one cut and left open in another, maybe.
Yeah, depending on what film. Yeah, depending on what film you see. I mean, you see that. I mean, I won't go into. I could go into loads of films that are like that. I have my favorites. You know, that the last what you watch depends, you know, it will change it completely. But going back, I mean, the thing with what you were saying about how he's not caring and stuff, there's a couple of scenes in going back to Groundhog Day where Bill Murray's character realizes that if he kills himself, he'd get out of it. You know, so he's jumping off buildings, he's putting electric, you know, he's putting iron, was it the toaster hotel? He's trying to electrocute himself in the bathroom. And of course, as he steals the groundhog, Punxsutawney Phil, and in a car, and he drives away and ends up in a quarry and drives over the cliff of the quarry and down he goes. And the car smashes down. And, you know, I think Chris Elliott, who's his cameraman, looks over and said, you know, oh, he's okay, you know. And then it explodes, the car explodes, which, if you've ever seen any scene similar, always happens in all films. A car will
Explosive
always
cars.
go off, and if it reaches the bottom intact, someone will always say, oh, he's all right, and then it will explode.
Boom.
It's a sta it's like a Hollywood cliche number, you know, 324 kind of thing. But of course, Bill Murray remembers everything. He remembers how to carve ice sculptures. He remembers how to play the piano. So he's got to remember being burnt alive. He's got to remember having his organs crushed and his, you know, broken. And you think, my God, after I've gone through that once, I wouldn't want to go through it again.
No, I see.
But it's seen as humorous. But we're back to 12:01 p.m. If anything like that were to happen, you get the feeling that, you know, it would be just awful. Because if you sort of think I'm gonna jump into traffic and get run over, that hurts. That really hurts, especially if you don't die, you know. So I don't want to give too much away, so I'm trying to be oblique here, but it's this memory thing, as I said, after how many loops of 59 minutes do you just give up?
I never knew how short an hour could be. I should be glad I'm not hung up on a 5-minute period. And if it were a second or less, I'd...
What's wrong?
In my entire life, this is the first time that I have ever struck up a conversation with a stranger. I can't believe that I'm thinking of telling you this. There's something about you that...
What? What is there about me?
Dolores. Something terrible has happened to the whole world. The whole universe. You see, it's like we're stuck. You know, like a needle on a scratch record. It all starts at 12:01. And everything goes along fine until 1 o'clock. And then bam, the whole world snaps back to 12:01 again. Like the whole hour never happened. And everything goes back to the way it was. Everything. So that each hour seems new. The fifth time or the 5 millionth time. Except to me. My memory's not erased. I am the only one that knows he's repeating the same hour. I'm sorry. I scared you. I'm sorry. But I'll tell you. You know what the worst part is? Well, it's all starting to seem normal to me now. I mean, I've been through this 30 or 40 times. You know, and the whole universe is going cockamamie. What am I doing about it? I'm sitting here eating carrot sticks.
The 59-minute thing's absolute beauty because it tethers the character to a certain distance as well. You know, that you can only get so far, and in Bush, you know, it's back at 12:01 again, and you have to start all over again. And it's sometimes, it's very much like a puzzle he has to figure out. And it's also purgatory rather than redemptive, isn't it? It's
It is. It is. Yeah,
it's
that's a
pushing.
good spot. Yeah.
It's pushing the rock up the mountain for eternity. So I suppose it could go all the way back to I don't know what that came out. Was that Ulysses or something like that? You know, that pushing the rock all the way up. For forever. It must be from the Greek from the Greek gods, I reckon, the Greek
All I
myths.
remember is Prometheus being chained to the rock and having his heart, with his liver, pecked out by a bird.
Yes, that's because he gave the gift of fire to
Yeah.
the
Hence
humans.
Frankenstein, the modern Prometheus, which was the full title of the book, the original
Oh,
novel.
well, I didn't know that. Yeah, that's so
I can
yes.
never remember. Is this it? No, it's not Sisyphus, is it, who did the rock? I know what you
Yeah,
mean. He's
yeah.
forever. Yeah, he has to push a boulder uphill all the day, and it will. Yeah, I know.
Well, I remember it in Ulysses, a cartoon on Children's BBC. I can't. I'm not. And I was probably miffed it wasn't the Three Musketeers on, but I ended up watching that. But I thought it was thoroughly depressing, for a kids' TV show. But yeah. But if you had the chance to make a film like 1201, would there be any sort of any tweaks that you'd like to add, or any extra bits in it, or would you leave as it is?
That's a good question. If I was remaking it or making it, I definitely wouldn't change the ending. I'd try and make it a much bleaker, actually. I'd try and, make it shocking kind of thing. It would be a shock. I kind of try like to come up with something that would, you'd watch it and you go, oh God, it really hits you. I mean, that's the idea. You watch something, it makes you laugh. You watch something, it makes you cry, and then you want to watch something that punches you in the gut. Not because, his head comes off and blood spurts everywhere. Not that kind of shock ending, but just, the circumstances. Perhaps realizing that he's not the only person this is happening to. But the other people are more than 59 minutes away from him.
Now that yeah that'd be a terrible ending. It would be a
That's something like that. Yes, yes, it would be that. It would be,
a paradox
yeah.
somewhere.
I just
Well,
leave it like that, thinking it's happening all over the world. He's not the only, maybe he's not the only one. Hooray, he's not the only one, but oh God, he's not the only one.
And that'd be sort of like a hook into a series link as well. So I think if you're listening, Netflix, we've pitched you an idea, I think.
But imagine the chaos. Imagine what if everybody knew that time was repeating. If every single person in the city and on the planet realized that they were living their lives again. Human nature, how many of them would commit atrocious crimes in that 59 minutes knowing nothing would happen? How much death and destruction and chaos, how much apathy, how many people giving up, how many people
Despair amongst people, and
yeah.
yeah, it's I think the repetitiveness of the cycle would probably sort of like it would certainly sort of like break down your stoic resolve, that's for sure. You'd think we'd all be sort of like rioting by the end.
Well,
So
that's the thing. Yes, some would be rioting, some would be,
Because we'd all
lying
be at
down,
different stages, you
nothing.
see. Yeah, we'd all be
Some
at
would.
different stages of realizing. So you'd go, well, why is that bloke going around running people over, and I'll go, I'm gonna chat that woman up over there, and all that, you're sort of like still in love when someone else is coming over and wants to shoot you with a machine gun.
But bizarrely, if you get rid of that, if you get rid of the all the violent stuff, that is life. People, I'm going to go and chat to that woman. Is she going to kill me? Is she going to, is she going to talk to me? Is she going to be nice? Is she not going to be nice? If time repeats, you're going to get all of that.
So you get the same anxieties anyway. So actually, that's probably the takeaway from the film, actually. It's sort of
And
like
it's not bad for a film that's only 30 minutes long to give to open up with these ideas that really mess with your mind once you think about them. I mean, that's another thing about films. We sit there and we got a popcorn in one hand, or if you're in, sitting on a sofa or whatever, and you watch something. And nowadays, it's just how many explosions can you get into the first, 10 minutes to keep you watching. The idea that you want to keep thinking about a film after it's finished, and I think it's affected you a bit more than it has me. Me, I think you've got more of, you've come up with more salient points on what it all means.
Well, this is
But
the beauty of the podcast, Bob. So, you're here for the mechanics. I'm here for the trying to add something new to it. And I really it didn't take much to sort of like get these new takes on it. And it was a really good film. And I would sort of recommend that people do seek this film out. And do watch it. We will potentially do you guys a favor if you're listening in, or and tell you not to bother on some of them, I'm pretty sure. But this one, this is a th th 30 minutes of a good distance run, I think. It's very good.
well, tell you what, I'm going to stick with the theory of immortality here, but living forever or repeat in time, with another film that's has a similar feeling. It's called He Never Died. Now, I don't think it's been on TV. I know its sequel, which it wasn't really a sequel, called She Never Died, which is a totally different plot, bears absolutely no relation to the first film. But He Never Died. It's the total opposite of films like Highlander, which posits that, isn't it great to be immortal? Isn't it wonderful? You go through the centuries killing, drinking, wenching, killing Nazis, having fights with swords and everything. It's wonderful being immortal, isn't it? This is the total opposite of that. This is immortality. What do you do day after day? I mean, it's going back to 1201, but this is worse. Now, the basic idea behind He Never Died is you've got a central character played by Henry Rollins, better known as a musician, and a few other bits and pieces. I think he was a DJ, was he, at one point?
Yeah, and a poet as well, I think, as well.
A poet.
Yeah.
He plays this character, Jack, and you, it starts off, there is definitely something wrong with Jack. Because he likes to, well, he doesn't like to, but he drinks blood. And he spends his days doing absolutely as little as he can. Really doesn't want to do anything. I mean, a big, you know, his a big event in his life is going to church bingo and sitting there dabbing the numbers off. You soon learn there's something to Jack. I mean, if the blood wasn't going away, he's not a vampire. Straight off, he's not an immortal vampire, which again, isn't it wonderful being a vampire? You get to dress up in goth, you get to, live a life of, Anne Rice interview with a vampire. It's Tom, Tom Cruise in that? Is it Tom Cruise?
I
Yeah.
think it, yeah.
There you are. Sorry, that's a perfect example of the research that's gone into this podcast. What was Tom Cruise in interview with a vampire? Yeah, but modern vampires, it's wonderful being a vampire, isn't it? Old vampires, it was terrible. You had to sort of sleep in a coffin of dirt and you could only come out at night and anything could kill you. But modern vampire, everyone wants to be a modern vampire. It's, you get to go to masked balls and hang around with rich people. But no, Jack isn't a vampire. You don't find out what he is, really. You find out who he is, but what he is and why he is a different matter. But things start to go wrong for Jack big time. The guy who supplies him with his blood goes missing, leaving Jack in a bit of a quandary because he has a thirst, but it's not just for blood, it's for human flesh. Which sounds really disgusting, and it is, and Jack finds it disgusting. He has to eat human flesh, blood. He doesn't like doing it, really. He doesn't, but he has to. Something compels him to do this. And basically, he can't be killed, which is a bit, you probably guess that from the title. He never died. He can't be killed. And during the course of the film, several people try to kill him. Using various methods. And what I said about the sort of banality of immortality is that every attempt is just, it's another day in life. It doesn't matter to Jack. He's reached the stage. He's so old. And by so old, I mean, more than hundreds. He's in the thousands of years old. What do you do? that you haven't done before? What are you going to do tomorrow that you haven't done today? So Jack basically has become this depressive, almost comatose character who shrugs off, people shoot him, and all he's worried about is getting the, pulling the bullets out of him. Otherwise, they stay in his head and it gives him migraines. That's the only reason it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if someone stabs him or something, because it's going to hurt, but so what? It's not going to kill him. He can't die. That's the point. He never died. Things I said, things get complicated. He finds he has a daughter that he didn't know. One of the local waitresses starts to get interested in him. And as I said, somebody's out to get him for some reason, which is, the idea of the plot. Now, this sounds like a very downbeat, depressing film, but it's really a very, very black comedy. And it is very humorous as it goes along. There's some wonderful lines in it towards the end, as he kills, as more and more people end up, Jack ends up killing people. And you find out, as I said, you do find out a bit more about Jack, and there are the odd things thrown in here. Jack was in the past, in history, he was characters we know, at least one. And they weren't very nice, as he, at one point, he says, "I killed children in your name," and things. And he's a real evil, nasty person, but he's not. He's Henry Rollins, who's bored with life, and not even the fact that people wanted to kill him sort of livens him up, because it's just another day. It'll be, they probably someone probably tried to kill him, 500 years ago, and someone will try and kill him 500 years time. What's the point? So he just sort of tries to live his life, and there's a strange man following him around that only he can see for some reason, which he doesn't like at all. So what did you think? What did you think of it as a sort of opposite of Highlander and Wonderful to Be Immortal?
Well, I first of all, I really enjoyed watching it. It was I loved the Henry Rollins character, and the fact that he even got the stoop and the way that he walked. He just shuffled. He was just so tired. He wouldn't expend any additional energy into anything if he
No,
didn't want to.
the minimal amount of energy to keep going and nothing else.
He was bored and sort of tired and sick and tired. And I took the thing that he sort of self-imposed himself in exile, only getting this getting his contraband blood and flesh from his contact. So he could control whatever urge it was for him to go out and actually get the
Yeah.
gear himself. So it was sort of like always in a constant stage of cold turkey, which obviously got really difficult when his as we found out, his daughter turned up, which injected a little bit of humanity into him, because some of the best exchanges were between him and her and the waitress, with some really good one-liners and asides. And I felt that he was only addicted to sort of, he needed to pick a fight with the person for to eat parts of them. He wouldn't go
Yes,
past
yeah.
a, if a vicar went past, he wouldn't be interested, but he really had to get in a fight with someone or an altercation or something to somehow that would then justify him eating parts of that person,
He
maybe.
tries that in the film at one point in the film, doesn't he? And the guy says something like, "Sorry, dude," or something, and just walks away. And this is there's disappointment that the guy won't attack him so he can, beat him up and eat him. Again, it sounds terrible. You do see a little bit of finger munching, I think, at one point.
Well, I should certainly be careful when I'm gardening, that's for sure. But I just found it all fascinating. And again, without giving too much away, there's a lot there to think about when the film concludes the way it does. I believe it's quite a satisfactory ending. but you may be banging into the internet what the possible connotations are of what you may see, because I think the most dialogue that Ronin's character comes out with, I think, is probably in the last 5 minutes of the film.
Well, there's a lengthy sequence where the waitress asks him what he did, what he did, what have you done, what do you do, what do you do? And he sort of starts reeling off this stuff over the centuries, and it just goes on and on and on and on and on and on and on. I just sort of think, oh, okay, so what, start off making candles or something, and he just everything just goes on.
What do you do? You never talk about yourself.
Well, I don't do much of anything anymore, but when I did, I did a little bit of everything.
Like what?
I was kind of a bodyguard for a while, and then I sold antiques, which probably made me the most. I owned a few businesses, construction for a while, truck driver, teacher for a while. History most of the time. Military took up a good part of my life. Manager for a whole slew of businesses. Landscaper, fisherman. I bootlegged for a while. Wreck diver, miner for coal, silver, gold. Stuntman for movies for a while. Nurse. I was a medic for a while. That's when I was in the military. Cook. Prison. There's a good amount of prison in there. Professional gambler. Horse breeder. Potter. I made pots for a while. Tinsmith. Then a blacksmith. Retail for almost everything. Mechanic.
Wow.
Yeah.
It's just a lot.
Well, what I found was that it's not that he hasn't got any morals, or he hasn't got any or whatever you want to call it, conscience or anything. It's just that everything is the same to him. It doesn't matter whether you're sitting there playing bingo or ripping a guy's throat out. It's the same. I know, as us looking in, think, okay, no, it's not the same. But if you're an immortal and you've been around for a hell of a long time, it is the same, because it means the same. In the, there's a Kirk Douglas film, Last Train from Gun Hill, where he goes after the people who killed and raped his wife. And he ends up in a town that's owned by, one man. It's one of these, the rancher owns everything, and the person he's after is the rancher's son. And he goes to the sheriff, who's, owned by the rancher as well, and he says, I've got warrants for arrest. He tries to do it properly by the book. And, the sheriff said, well, no, he isn't even the sheriff. He's the sheriff. He's just a deputy. They don't have a sheriff. And, he calls the sheriff yellow because he won't stand up to him. And the sheriff has this wonderful speech about, look, the weeds are going to grow just as high on my grave as they are going to grow on yours, and no one's going to remember that you came in here a hero, and I, and died a hero or whatever, and I stayed in here a coward. It doesn't matter. Over time, no one will remember. So I think a lot of what Jack does is based on the fact that, maybe for the now people will care, but who's going to care that you ripped the throat out of some, street punk 50 years from now? So it doesn't mean anything. It won't mean anything. And I think that's part of it. It does get humorous, very humorous towards the end, as Jack is trying to explain things to the waitress, especially when he's sort of giving her a satchel full of money, and he's saying, "Look, if you take this, you, your children, your children's children, your children's children will never have to work again." because it doesn't matter. It's just, it's money. What good is $1 million to someone who's gonna, was around in the year 900 BC, 500 BC, 500 AD, perhaps, going back and back, and will be in the year 25,000, 30,000. What good's a satchel of money to someone,
Oh,
So.
yeah. I think that it's an interesting thing with that and Highlander, really, because, like, I enjoyed watching Highlander, but when you watch it back now, it's it's fairly dated. When I'll go back probably the same amount of years and rewatch this film, it won't appear as dated. It's probably it's less glamorous in a way, a lot more realistic. But I'm just wondering if this was the film that the edge that Highlander was missing was in this film. It would have kept Highlander perhaps a little bit more grounded, with the attritional war between like the two main characters in that. And if they're sort of going, oh, please stop hitting me with a sword, you're going to give me a headache,
Well, I don't know if you've ever seen Highlander 2, The Quickening. Don't.
Right,
Please don't.
okay.
There's a couple of versions of it around. But put it like this: in the first, in Highlander, there can be only one, and it's him. Sean Connery has his head chopped off back in whenever, in the past. Yeah. In Highlander 2, The Quickening, which is a sequel, Sean Connery plays the same character, and there isn't only one. It all starts again because they all come from outer space and they're all weird aliens and stuff. And Sean Connery gets reincarnated, I think, on a opera stage or something. It's a bizarre film. Please don't watch it. If you are listening, I know I said please make up your own mind. If you are going to watch Highlander 2, make sure you watch the right version. If any of them can be called right, but they kind of flogging a dead horse on that film, I'm afraid.
There's too much controlled substances being used in the writer's office for the second one there. That's so I mean same again really. And Bob, I mean, would there be anything you'd wanted to add or change about that
What
the
I would
film?
change, if you go looking for the film, I would change the advertising material for a start, because if you see the DVD cover or the poster and you read the back of it, you think, oh, I know what's going on. It's wrong, right? On the cover of the DVD, he's got sort of angel wings, and on the back, or he had angel wings. On the back, it's something about an angel of vengeance, right? He is not an angel. I want to put that out there, as you will find out. But that is the advertising. That's the DVD for it. I've got it in my collection, and it's misleading as hell.
Yes.
But.
Oh, yeah. One thing I'd say about obviously the fight scenes in that film as well, I think they were expertly handled. Once you got the general idea of what he was capable of doing, it just became quite comical in the end that he would go out and do that and then come back on and carry on the scene. And there seemed to be one bloke that he never actually did finish off, and that was quite funny as well.
Oh, the guy took his eye out, was it? Is that the one? And when he tortures him, he's ready to torture him, and the guy is so afraid, and it's like so, and then he just turns around and goes, oh, that's it then, we can go. Oh, well, yeah, that's all right, yeah, I can go, yeah, go on then, and he's got a pair of pliers, a bolt cut, wire cutters in his hand, and he's going to do something with them, and the guy is freaking out, and he's not like a threat, it's not a fake threat. I mean, I don't know. There's have you ever seen the film Freebie and the Bean?
No, I've not seen that,
Oh, it's
no.
back in the 70s. Oh God, James Caan, wasn't it? And there's a scene in that where they're going the two of them are putting on an act, and and he's going to go, right, you better get the pliers. Not the pliers. Yes, the pliers. Oh my God, I can't watch. And it's con, but he comes in with a in he never died. He comes in with a pair of pliers, and he's going to chop and eat something, and the other guy knows he's going to, do something, because he's already missing an eye. He's already taken his eye out, and the end. And it's not a cop out. It's not any kind of con or any kind of, thing to get the guy to spill the beans. He's really going to do it, and then he's really had enough. He's not going to do it. As I said, it doesn't mean anything. It's the endlessness of immortality, that showing a different light to it. When we find out who the villain of the film is, I would have made him a bit more perhaps afraid. He seems to be quite ambivalent towards going on, what's going on. He kind of has an idea of, about Jack. And there is a villain. And he does kind of, I like how, you know, there is a comeuppance. It has got a happy-ish ending. It's got a weird ending. You can admit that. A straight, not weird, but different, I'd say. And the guy just seems to be too laid back at times. I'd have made him a bit more, you know, afraid, perhaps.
Yeah, I'd go along with that. And also, I think the... you couldn't apply the Highlander strapline of there can only be one. I'll leave that there. I think,
There is, I mean, they did want to make a sequel. Everyone involved in it has said we'd be up for it. And there was talk about a TV series, but I mean, generally, there's talk about TV series for everything, but I think it's one of those films you want to see more. You know, a lot of films end. I mean, you know, a Mission Impossible film ends and the world is saved and Tom Cruise gets the girl. You don't really want to see you've just watched for 2 hours, hour and a half. You don't want to see another hour of it, hour and a half of it. You want to see another film, another plot or whatever. He never died. You want to see more. You want to find out what happens. How, you know?
I liked his world. I wanted to see more of his world. I'd certainly agree with that. It seemed like the perfect pilot to something that never materialized. Maybe
it would be a great pilot, but it's one. I have a feeling if it ever got anywhere, the money men would be saying, you know, well, how many films and explosions can we put it? There are no explosions in the film. There are fights, there are guns, there are chains.
And there's humour. There's humour as well.
And it is, and you wouldn't think it, but there you go. So should we go with one of the funniest films I've ever seen?
Yeah.
I think you know what I'm talking about.
I think I do.
I think you know what I mean. I'm talking about, come on.
Is it the Today I... I woke up the day I died.
I woke up early the day I died.
Yes.
Not necessarily. No, it's not. But
Or is it the giant claw?
It's the giant claw. Come on. I told you to watch some films. That's got to be the funniest. You actually found I woke up early the day I died, which we will come to, funnier, did you? You found it funnier.
I did find that. I found that one funnier. So
I find it funny for a very personal reason. And that was when I was a kid, I came home from school one day and my dad had finished work. He was a builder and he knocked off early. And they used to put these films on in the afternoon. And the two of us watched the film together and we just laughed ourselves silly with it. And so every time I watch it, it's not only makes me laugh, it makes me laugh because I laugh with my dad. You know, very rarely do we sort of, you know, but usually by the time he got home, we were so tired, he'd go to sleep or whatever, and then we'd all have to keep quiet while he had a doze in the corner. But, you know, at sort of 3:30 in the afternoon, we're watching this old black and white 1950s monster movie about a giant bird a giant bird monster from outer space, and we just laughed our heads off. And if you've never seen The Giant Claw, I am going to try and explain it to you, but you absolutely have to see it. Even if it means just sort of pulling it up on Google and just typing in, you know, The Giant Claw, you have to see what the bird looks like, but you have to hear it. You have to see it moving. It's sad, really, because the people involved in making it. I mean, let's start at the beginning, okay? Sam Katzman, low budget producer, has just made Earth versus the Flying Saucers with Ray Harryhausen doing special effects, and they're good. You know, it's a Ray Harryhausen. It's flying saucers attacking Washington, D.C. There's explosions, there's everything. So Sam Katzman may not have been the next film, maybe in a film after perhaps, but very close to Earth Versus, he decides to make another Invaders from Space type movie and comes up with a giant claw. Now, the film was made without the actors knowing what the special effects were going to look like, but they were told they'd be something special. You know, they would be special. Money would be spent on the effects. And he was hoping to get Harryhausen again to do the effects, you know, to look fine. And he couldn't get Harryhausen. What he got was a Mexican effects company to do it on the cheap. And boy, is it on the cheap. So, I mean, the plot is your basic monster comes from outer space, terrorizes Earth. Only one man knows about it. You know, no one believes him. There's a girl. Eventually, oh my God, look up in the sky. What's that? It's, you know, is it a bird? Is it a plane? No, it's a bird. You know, that kind of thing. It terrorizes the Earth. Man is useless. Bullets just bounce off him because he's got an antimatter shield kind of thing. And eventually, the hero works out a way to disable the antimatter shield. Here we go again. And destroy the giant claw, the giant bird. You know, now the advertising for the giant claw has two sort of problems. The first is it doesn't show its head in any way. And the second, it looks like a giant eagle. They always show sort of the body and cut off the head in the posters, right? So you're thinking, my God, we are going to see some grade A giant eagle type monster. I don't know if you remember Pelham puppets. When I was a kid, if you were at Christmas, if you had a bit of money, you got a Pelham puppet, which was, as the name suggests, a puppet, you know, along the lines of, Thunderbird, Stingray, whatever. Not as sophisticated, not as convincing, you know, but you get the feeling the giant claw is a Pelham puppet because it's awful. It's been called many things. I mean, if you call it a turkey, you start thinking, oh, it looks like a turkey. You know, what does a turkey look like? Oh, a turkey looks like a... It's not. It kind of looks like if you told a six-year-old, draw a turkey that's a giant monster from outer space. That's what you get, you know? It's got a long, long neck. And remember, this is a puppet. So it's got goofy eyeballs. It's got an annoying shriek, a terrible annoying shriek that you hear all the time. Its wings barely flap. It glides around. There are strings. You can see it. It attacks what's basically other toys, which it picks up in. I mean, I watched it again recently. I do enjoy this. I told you, it makes me laugh. I love watching this film. And there's one scene where it swoops down on a gang of kids in a hot rod as it's driving along the road.
Yeah, Daddy O.
Yeah, Daddy O.
Don't worry about us, Daddy O. We know what we're doing.
And it picks it up and it flies off with it in its mouth and it drops it. And for three or four frames, you can actually see the model of the jalopy, which isn't a jalopy anymore. It just looks like a rectangle that's about to set on fire or something, hanging from a thread. Well, it's not a thread, it's a string. It's like literally a black string going to a hook on the back of the model. And you see that in all its terrible glory.
Come on, man, make this thing go! Come on! Let's get speed on this! Oh, man, he ain't moving at all!
Come on!
Maniac driving with lights and fast.
Maybe he didn't hear the proclamation.
I'll flag him down when he tries to pass.
Hey, Daddy-O! Get that tin can off the road! Come on, man! Hey, man, who's afraid of the big bad bird?
Put out your lights! Get off the road!
Don't worry about us! We've got salt for its tail!
Hey, watch out for that salt! Don't get in the carbs!
Oh!
Come on, let's go!
See, kids, they don't know what they're doing.
Dig you later, Gator!
Hey, Daddy-O, don't call us. We'll call you.
And of course, everyone's reacting to this as if it was, you know, Ray Harryhausen type, you know, real special effect. And it is the cheapest, you know, it's model trains. And I genuinely mean model trains. I'm not being sarcastic. I'm not saying, the trains are like, you know, it's a Hornby's type thing. They really are model trains. They really are awful cars. I know this is the 50s. I understand it's not photorealistic CGI, you know, but the 50s had films with giant, I know it had them, it had some other great monster movies, and then there's, you know, the bottom, and that is the giant claw. And I'm not saying it's bad, because that implies
you don't have to.
There's something terrible about it. It is one of those so bad it's good, which I think I shall talk a bit about when we come across our next film. But it is one you will watch again and again, because it's entertaining. Now, entertainment can be anything. Entertainment could be, you know, a man setting himself on fire in front of an audience and, you know, ta-da, I'm safe, you know. Or it could be a clown making you laugh, a comedian. It can be, you know, a ride on a roller coaster or anything. Entertainment is a great word, you know. And watching this film is entertaining. But I like it a lot. I think it's funny. What about you then? Do you think it's funny?
Well, looking back, it's funny. I think, everything that you picked up on about the peculiarity of the turkey beast thing, you can clearly see that the neck's long enough for an arm. You know, so it's like a sock puppet with a couple of eyes on. The dialogue in the film was interesting, to say the least. And the main character, I think the main character's way of seducing the female lead was somewhat direct, where he just molested her on the plane, which I thought was quite funny.
Yeah, he's just talking to her, and suddenly it's like it's locking lips, isn't it?
Yeah, that's it, and then the. The generals in the army and all that, I mean, they looked about 75 or 80 anyway in the film. And then this supersonic bird that can fly close to the speed of sound can just about keep up with a twin engine bomber, which sounds quite surreal.
I can't even reach it. It's always flying behind it.
Well, there's always a stick between it. If you look closely, you can see that the bird is being supported by something, and then there must be a wire that's supporting the plane. It's sort of like, and the cutscenes on it were sort of like hilarious. But it did have the best quote of all the films, the best movie bit of dialogue in there, and that was,
"Well, then what in blazes are we waiting for?"
"Well, that's what I've been talking about for 10 minutes. Get me my pants, will you, General?" "Oh, Sally, get out of here."
Boy.
What was the name of the, because I'm terrible with names of actors and all that, what was the name of the male lead in that film?
Jeff Morrow. Jeff Morrow's Morrow. The actor in that. Mara Corday.
And she I think she was quite a heartthrob at the time as well, wasn't she? I think they were both quite prized
well, Morrow,
stars
yeah,
for
I mean,
the film,
they were
they?
Yeah, they were pretty good. I mean, Morrow, you know, they wouldn't show the film. Apparently, they wouldn't show the film to the actors after they'd made it. I wonder why. You know, Morrow is, you know, there's a story that Morrow actually paid to go into a cinema to watch it, to see it, and then believed, you know, then sort of slunk out, hoping no one noticed him, because, you know, the audience, and Corday was convinced her career was over. Apparently, but the advertising for the film is incredibly misleading, and not just the poster, because they keep going on and on about how it's this in the advertising, it's a prehistoric monster. It can fly at four times the speed of sound, according to the poster. It's, you know, hundreds of people are eaten, you know, planes crashed, entire buildings blown away. And, you know, if you've just been watching Earth versus the Flying Saucers, you might find some of that a bit familiar, because, you know, some of the better parts of the giant claw are actually lifted off of Earth versus the Flying Saucers, and including the sound of, you know, at the end of Earth, they use a weapon to bring down the saucers, and it emits a sound. And funnily enough, that's exactly the same sound, the weapon that Jeff Morrow puts together at the end to take down the giant claw. And I don't know, I think I might have mentioned to you about the very ending. I am convinced that when you see the very final frame of the giant claw, it's just got its middle finger up at you. it's as it slowly sinks, how they've defeated it, and it sinks into the water. I am convinced it's giving you the middle finger.
That was the best effect as well, because to make a puppet sink straight away without it like bobbing back up was quite good. But Jeff Morrow's voice I found strangely familiar.
Now, this is a blow-up I had made of a bubble chamber photograph. The chamber was bombarded with high-speed particles. Result? A photograph of a trail made by what is known as a mu meson. Mu mesons are 210 times heavier than electrons, which means that in a mesic atom, the electrons revolve around a nucleus at just a small fraction of the ordinary distance in the normal atom.
Rooney, I don't have all day to bark at you, so I'm going to make this short and sweet. I want my daughter out in front of the school in 10 minutes by herself. I don't want anybody... Rooney! Rooney!
Yes, yes.
Listen here, pay attention. I changed my mind. I want you out in front of the school with her. I'd like to have a few words with you, by God. On second thought, we don't have time to talk right now. We'll get together soon and we'll have lunch.
The giant claw. It was an experience, I must admit, and I'm, you know, it must have been so out there that, you know, for you and your father to bond over that one afternoon. I mean, that's got to be the admission price alone, really. But yeah, I mean, I'm not even going to. I've asked you the last two times, you know, on your last two films, what would you change about it to make it better? But this is only this podcast can only last for several hours.
Don't change anything. If you change it, it'll be a different film, and it won't be the film that I enjoy. I can well understand someone watching that and saying, well, that was a load of rubbish. I can understand that, based on the fact that perhaps you've just sort of seen, you know, Lord of the Rings or something, you know, and you've seen some, you know, hundreds of millions of dollars spent on something that I don't know what the budget for the giant claw was. I'm guessing it wasn't hundreds of millions of dollars.
A lot of it was left in the producer's pocket, I think.
The thing, see, with bad films. I mean, I think we'll cover that next, to be honest, in a bit more detail. But what is a bad film? You know, which kind of, I think we can segue onto what we just, what you called the funniest film you'd seen, and or one of the funniest, perhaps out of the four, perhaps. But based on a work, an original script by a man who actually has been labeled, you know, the worst director ever, and in the books, to begin with, accused of making the worst film in the world. Now, this isn't it. Now, this is a bit of backstory. Edward D. Wood Jr., film director, author, cross-dresser, hardcore filmmaker, alcoholic. I mean, that was his life, you know, not necessarily in that order. Apparently, Plan 9 from Outer Space. Have you heard of that?
I've heard of that film, yeah.
I've heard of it. It was, I mean, Ed made a load of films. He started off doing bits and pieces, a few cowboy shows for TV and that. And then he made some sort of juvie gangster films, 1950s, and smut type, anything cop, nothing Jailbait is another one. Well, I can go through a list if necessary, but you got something like Jailbait. And then he progressed on to horror films and science, not science fiction. He was friends with Bela Lugosi. Years later, you may have seen Johnny Depp in a film called Ed Wood, based on his life.
Yes, yep, that's where I was introduced to him.
And so that's where you introduced him. But yeah. Up till about, well, the introduction, it was in a book, The 50 Worst Movies of All Time by the Medved Brothers. And it came out as, this is the worst film of all time, Plan 9 from Outer Space, made by Edward D. Wood Jr. Okay. And ever since then, people then got into Ed, because before it, it was just another old black and white film chucked in the back of Beyond that maybe you saw at 3 o'clock in the morning, you know, on American TV, definitely on British TV. But he became, he had this sort of cult following later on as people picked up on it. And it's really unfair to call Wood, you know, the worst director in the world. And it's really unfair to call Plan 9 a bad film. And that's kind of why I wanted just to do a quick detour before we get into I Woke Up Early the Day I Died, which is or was meant to be an Ed Wood film, but has a much more modern telling. But what is a bad film? What do you call a bad film?
Well, I've seen a lot of films that are meant to be good, bad. I think it's so subjective. For me, it's a film where I sort of come out disappointed.
Exactly. Yeah, disappoint. Yeah. 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 None of us will sit down and start to watch a film because it's bad, you know, unless we get, you know, unless we're thinking it's going to be one of those, it's so good, it's bad, you know, or so bad, it's good, or so bad, it's good, it's bad. It's round it goes kind of thing. You know, this is a bad film. I'm going to enjoy this bad film because it's terrible, you know. There's that. So it's disappointment. You know, if you're going to watch, you know, Crocker Gator 6 versus the three-headed Pythonatron or whatever the latest is from, you know, sci-fi or The Asylum or something. You know going in what you're going to get. And at the end, you're either going to say, I enjoyed that or I didn't, you know, but you'll be disappointed. It won't be a bad film. They spent money on actors. They spent money on sets. The effects may not be that good, but they spent money on them and everything. And, you know, they tried. You know, there is a, you know, there is one sort of an unspoken rule in Hollywood. Nobody sets out to deliberately make a bad film. You know, it's not like the producers where, you know, he sells so many percent, you know, he sells so many percentage stock in the show. It's got to be a dud so no one can collect on the profits. You know, it's that kind of thing. So no one says, you know, right, this film is going to be scrape in the barrel. You know, some amateur filmmakers think that is the way to success by going, oh, yeah, this is going to be a spoof and it's going to be in bad taste and it's going to be deliberately, you know, people are going to look at this and I'm going to make a name for myself by putting out a piece of, you know, absolute piece of shit.
Yeah, shitpost, so to speak. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, deliberately doing so, but no one spends money. Now, Ed Wood wasn't a bad film director. His films are probably more inept. And that, I'm not saying that humorously. I mean, all of Ed's films suffer from bad writing. And I'm going to use word, but I won't use bad. I'll use inept. Inept writing, inept acting talent, you know, inept staging, inept effects, inept backgrounds, inept plotting. They're all lacking something. But put it together, it's not a bad film. It may be an inept film, but it's not bad. I mean, I've watched Plan 9 from Outer Space at least 4 or 5 times. I've watched a, you know, colorized version of it. And for Plan 9, yes, they do use shower curtains and a bit of wood to indicate that you're in an airplane, you know, cockpit. Yes, the graves are, you know, about a foot deep. Yes, the gravestones wobble as you walk past it, you know. Yes, Bela Lugosi died, you know, before he could film all his scenes. So they have, you know, someone else holding up a cape in front of his eyes who is 6 foot, you know, about two, is 6 foot tall and was a dental practitioner. I think he was a dental practitioner pretending. You know, yes, you've got Dudley, you know, there's an actor called Dudley Manlove. You know, at the beginning, you've got the incredible, you know, future events like this will affect you in the future. You know, Inspector Clay's dead, murdered, and somebody's responsible. You know, it's that, and that's not bad. You could say that's bad writing. That's inept. That's just not knowing what you're doing. And that was Ed Wood's, I'd say, his later films. And his final film that he never got made, but he had as a script, was actually the full title was, which I made a note of it, was I Awoke Early the Day I Died. Now, at the end of his life, after Ed couldn't get any films made, as I said, he started writing porn films, porn films and porn books, because Ed was a cross-dresser. He famously, his wife said, one of his friends was reported as saying that in the Marines, he was afraid that of getting injured, because he didn't mind getting killed, but if he was injured, when the doc cut his battle dress off, they discover he was wearing pink bra and panties. I had a thing for Angora sweaters as well, and they appear in a lot of his films. And one of his films, you know, Glenn or Glenda, which is about cross-dressing, he actually plays Glenn, and all he wants is, you know, to wear an Angora sweater. That was his fetish. Now, at the end of his life, he became an alcoholic. I mean, really, really bad drinker. And there was no money. And he reached a stage where he was getting thrown out of his lodgings with his then wife. And he could only take a few items in a box. He didn't have much possession. He'd sell off his typewriters, to be honest. People would give him typewriters so he could write, and then he'd hock it for a bottle of booze or something. He really was in a bad state. What he left behind was an unfinished biography of Bela Lugosi, which would have been brilliant, because he made friends with Lugosi, and he was the only one at the end of Lugosi's life who would give him a job. It wasn't much of a job, you know, but he did pay him, and he did respect him. And apparently when he got chucked out, he only really took three things: a typewriter, an Angora sweater, and the script to what later became I Woke Up Early the Day I Died. It is the last work of Edward D. Wood Jr., you know, wrongly called the worst director in the world. Now, we cut to 1998. And I don't know if you know Billy Zane, who's an actor. I think off the top of my head, the only thing I can remember him in was the Tales from the Crypt film. The first one, not Bordello of Blood, the other one, where he plays a demon or a devil. I can't remember Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight. Tales from the Crypt, the Demon Knight. That's the only Billy Zane I can remember. So what he did was he approached Wood's widow and asked, would it be possible to take this script and make it? As you've seen from the script, it's lacking a major thing, and that major thing is dialogue.
That's right. Yeah.
There is no dialogue in I Woke Up Early the Day I Died. Mm-hmm. There are sound effects.
Yeah.
Oh, God, are there sound effects. There are bagpipes as well.
Lots of bagpipes.
Lots of bagpipes. There are also lots and lots of guest appearances. I've made a list of some of the major ones. I mean, you've got Billy Zane. I mean, before getting on, the plot is quite simple. He's he's in a hospital, or is he in prison? I can't remember. He's in hospital.
Mm. Some sort of an asylum, isn't it?
That's it. Yeah, and he escapes by dressing up as a nurse. There's the cross dressing.
But then I found an interesting parallel with that to Ledger's Joker in the Batman film.
Well, how he
dresses as the nurse.
And I thought, because he comes out and it all exploding behind him.
Yeah, it's that, all that's exploding. Yeah. And I found the shot Well, extremely similar. I think, you know, I'm wondering if by osmosis that's got into somebody else's mind.
But I mean, he's in. I think it's a sanitarium. He escapes by dressing as a nurse. He robs a loan office. He dumps the money in a coffin in a cemetery, and then when he goes back to get it later on, the money's gone. And the film then is the character called the thief trying to find out where the money is. And running into a load of weird characters along the way, and situations, and stock footage, which was a staple of Ed Wood's film. So you can expect to see Ron Perlman, otherwise known as, well, he was the Beauty and the Beast, wasn't he, in Kronos, and a lot of things. Tippi Hedren, formerly of the Byrds. John Ritter, what was he? Was the tool man, wasn't he? Oh, I can't remember his name. Tom, there was a TV series. He played the tool man. Oh,
The only Ritter I can think of is the guy in Friday Night Dinner, but that's not the same one, is
that
it?
could be him. Oh, I don't know. Karen Black, Sandra Bernhardt, who was a bit of obscure. If you've ever seen the Lone Wolf and Cub films based on the manga, and you've heard of Shogun Assassin, which was the Americanized taking of two of those films, squishing them together, taking out all the boring bits, leaving all the blood and guts in. Sarah Bernhardt is the voice of Daigoro, the little boy in the baby cart. She dubbed the voice. I just chuck these things in here, just here and there, just for everyone else. You got Eartha Kitt, Christina Ricci, Jonathan Taylor, Ricky Schroeder, Leif Garrett. And this is an uncredited character. Well, he's credited as Lord Heinrich Binky Alcoa III, and he's the shopkeeper with a special interest in his shoe, in his white high heels, which when he visits the shop, that's Bud Cort. Really, I haven't seen Bud Cort for a long, long time. Many great films of the 70s. Brewster McCloud. See, Rooster Cogburn, Brewster McCloud, that was one of his. One of the things in the film is noise. But you said it was funny. Why did you find it funny as opposed to just sort of an Ed Wood film?
Well, it was okay, so it was funny, not in a sort of like a laugh out loud sort of way, but I found the film humorous because of the scene at the beginning where he changes out of them high heel shoes and hangs them up, and the shopkeeper comes out and he's not bothered that the stuff's got nicked because he's got the shoes. It reminded me of what a world would be like if Rocky Horror Show met Grand Theft Auto. It was that sort of vibe about it, and it was the sort of film that Channel 4 was made for. It would be the sort of film that they would show. So I found it sort of humorous in those sort of ways, and also the character acting, the method acting of the main character was very good. The way he would goose step about and sort of like hook himself off of the camera and things like that. And it was like, because there was no dialogue, I think there was a lot of heavy lifting from the sort of like the method acting of the main character. I thought the film went on a bit too long. I think it could have been perhaps a good 30 minutes shorter, because I feel that the people that were making the film wanted to get as much Ed Wood into it as possible. I think in the end it was probably perhaps made by committee, and everybody wanted to leave their own bit in, maybe. Again, the universe where that was filmed, it was sort of like a 1970s vibe to it, and I'm wondering if it was set in the time that Ed Wood had wrote it, or you know, close to the year that he died, because the way that the cars were like big 1970s cars, and the way it was shot, it was sort of like Hill Street Bluesy sort of or Streets of San Francisco sort of shooting style, and that's what just made me think of the Grand Theft
Yeah,
Auto. You know, it's sort of like a yeah.
it doesn't feel like it's just 2 years away from the 21st
No,
century. You know, it's 98.
Yeah, it does seem to be set in the past, and it was sort of like with the characters and the Undertakers and things like that. It was all very much reminded me of the Munsters and the Addams Family. You know, it was all it was like a lot of different tropes in it. That's why I found it fascinating. Now, would I watch that film again? Probably not, but I did enjoy watching it. It was you know, it was but you know, would I? You know, I always Oh, if I had the money, I would set up a new film channel, and I'd call it the Third Act channel, and it would only show the third act of all the films because I like them. You know, you watch that, you go, oh, look, Commando's on. I like watching the last bit of Commando. Oh, Terminator's on. I like watching the last bit of that on. And I think this would be one of my films in the Third Act channel as well, where I would you know, put that on
That's
because
interesting. That's interesting.
yeah.
So, you
So.
know, I watched the film, and my impression of it was that it just that it was an impression. It was, I know it was his film, but it was deliberately made to look like an Ed Wood film. And I think they try too hard at times. Like, you know, as you said earlier, they're just pushing a bit too much to make it like, now, you know, Ed used stock footage, a lot of stock footage in his film. Not for a re you know, for the reason he couldn't afford anything else. You know, he couldn't afford to have, you know, army jets flying overhead. He had to have stock footage in his film to flesh it out. And you get a feeling in this film when they're doing stock footage, or when you've seen actors and they're not acting, they're not bringing their Shakespeare to it, shall we say. And you can kind of sense they're deliberately not doing that. And the stock footage is there not to save money, but just because there's stock footage in an Ed Wood film and this is an Ed Wood script. And it does feel at times that the budget should have been spent on making it better. Not by making it looks like they set out to make it worse at times.
I think that's that's very fair. I think they've tried to make it, yeah, like you say, they've tried to follow all the rules that Edward would have done in a film, but not realised he's done it through constraints. He's not done it through you know, he's done it through necessity, not because he wanted to do it that way. He really wanted to perhaps have a different scene and things like that there. And I do wonder why there was no, you know, why he put no dialogue in the screenplay in the first place. Whether he was going to like you know, put it to someone else, or whether it was always going to be sort of like a silent film.
It may just be that he wasn't capable of writing dialogue at that stage of his life. You know, there's a story in the book about he calls up one of his friends and asking, "Can I borrow $5 for, you know, can I borrow $5?" And the guy says, "Look, you know, Eddie, if it's for food, you know, you can have, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll come round with as much food as I can, you know, and you'll eat, you know." And you know, Ed put the phone down and in, you know, but he said, "I don't want it for, it's not for booze," but that's what Ed wanted, you know. And another guy gave him three old typewriters, you know, which that's how he was making his living. As I said, he was writing these porn books and things at the end of his life, and he hocked the typewriters for booze. He was that far gone, unfortunately. So it may be silent because that was. He couldn't write dialogue at that point, or he didn't want to write dialogue. But then again, maybe, I don't know, maybe it was a thematic reason, you know. The sound effects, I don't know, bagpipes get me. There's too much bagpipes in this.
I'd go, yeah,
If you
I'd say,
ask me the question, what I'd change, cut the
cut
bagpipes.
the bagpipes.
Cut the bagpipes.
I'd certainly take the bagpipes out, and the 30 minutes I think of it maybe, you know. And I think it was strange because stylistically right at the beginning, you know, the opening credits and all that, it looked as if it was like an MTV sort of film, you know,
That's a
like with all
brilliant
the
opening, though. I mean, I love that opening. I've actually, you know, I said the music by that is by Darcy Clay, a young lad. I think he was Australian. He died really early in his life. I mean, I you know, after hearing that, I set out to find, you know, the music as an MP3, you know, which I bought legally, I hasten to add.
Of course, of course.
Yes, of
Yeah,
course, of course. I can cross my
that's
fingers.
staying in, Bob. Yeah,
That's
definitely.
staying
He's
in.
staying
Yes,
in.
make sure you emphasize that. But
Yeah.
I that's a, that you know it's Jesus, I was evil. I mean, and the opening credits, you know, I've said it looks like they were put together by the kid next door, you know, with a bit of glue and a scissors and or something on, you know, I've just got a new computer. I'm going to
Yeah.
learn how to use Adobe
Yeah.
Premiere, you
Yes,
know,
it. Yeah. I'm going to
for
give it. Yeah.
beginners kind
I'm
of
going to give
thing.
it some dog's bollock syndrome on it. Yeah, it just seemed odd. It didn't match the feel of the film. Like I say, it was all sort of like 1970s and and sort of like big sedans and things like that. And then it wasn't, it did it, they didn't match the film. So I'm wondering again whether the credits were sort of like outsourced just to finish the film off or something like that. Because it just had what I like about that film was it's the stories that are around it and the fact that Edward's life you sort of like understand that this is the unfinished film, that someone else has tried to finish off, and it goes to show how unique people are, because I don't think Edward would have made the same film.
Well, I mean, the last real film I think Ed was in was I remember what the Tom made. I think it was called Take It Out in Trade. And in that he plays you know a cross dress an ugly Ed wasn't the greatest. He had fought he lost his teeth in the war and he had false teeth, but you know Ed liked to dress up, but he wasn't, should we call, convincing, you know, when he was young. And he if you watch Edward, if you watch Johnny Depp in Edward, he's got a moustache, you know, he's walking around dressed in everything and an angora with a moustache.
Yeah, I
And
think yeah, that was the joke, wasn't it? Because his missus was going, "Well, my jumper's always stretched," and he
but
wouldn't
I
answer it.
mean, you
Yeah.
know, in Take It Out in Trade, which was one of it was a lost film for a while. You know, it really no one could get a copy, and then eventually, I think it was SW something weird video. I think it was found it. Now I've you know, again, I've got a copy that I legally own. Nudge, nudge, wink, wink. Of course, I have. And they also released the outtakes for it, which you know are about as long as the film itself. But that was Ed's. I think that was probably Ed's last appearance. He's looking a bit. I mean, he's not staggering drunk kind of thing and forgetting his lines through it, but he's not up there with Laurence Olivier, shall we say, either. You know, it's showing on his face the ravages of time and alcohol, which is a pity. And I said, I don't like, you know, people say, going back to what I said about inept, you know, and bad. You like you, I probably wouldn't watch it again. I've seen it. I think I've seen it twice. You know, I watched it and then I watched it to review it, kind of thing, properly. I'll get an idea of it again. But you don't have, you know, it's not like people who watch Star Wars 500 times or something. No, I'd watch Plan 9 from Outer Space, or you know, I definitely watch that many, many times. This is, I enjoy it. Not because it's bad, I'm not laughing at the badness of it. It's a film, you know, at the end of the day, Ed made movies. Goddamn, you know, how many movies do people who criticize his films badly, you
Yeah,
know, how many have
how many have
they
they
made?
made?
You know,
Exactly,
he made them,
yeah.
and he made, you know, these are Holly, you know, they were made in Hollywood with a, you know, and they may not be the best in the world, but they are cut together and they are films and they are out there and there is legacy and
Yeah, and people knew what they were getting when they were working for the guy. It weren't as if he was going to miraculously become sort of like another director overnight. It's sort of like some people wanted to work with the guy, just to see how it was. But I mean, out of the four films, I'm not going to be cruel. I'm not going to tell you just to pick one or anything like that. I think all four of them. Oh, it's tough between it's between 1201 and He Never Dies for me, and I really they're sort of like a double bill, really. I think I think 1201's sort of like a it's sort of like it's a redemptive double bill for me, so I'm going to keep it at two because I can make the rules up. But what about you, Bob?
Well, I mean, you know, the giant claw because it means stuff to me. It means it's a personal choice, that is. I do like He Never Died. That I yeah, if I can have two, I'll have those two then. I mean, 12:01, you can't, you don't want to watch that again and again and again. Otherwise, you could, otherwise you start thinking, hang on, am I in a time bounce? You know, how many times can you watch Groundhog Day? Answer, once a day for the rest of your life. You know, it's that kind of thing. I've seen that's it. He Never Died. Yeah, it's you want to watch it to say you watched it. It's not a complete. It's not. I watched all the Edward things, but it's one of those films. Yeah, you watch it once, and it's not. You don't want to watch it again because it's because of what you've seen. It's just mm-hmm. that you don't want to watch it again.
Yeah,
you know, it's not. It's just there's nothing. It's ambivalence towards. You've seen it. You had the experience. Now watch something else. Have another experience. Now, the giant claw. I watch because I get an experience again and again and again. He Never Died. It's a really good film. I love the way Henry Rollins is so well. He's so laid back. He's horizontal. You know, unless he's got to act, especially in the last sort of 10, 15 minutes, where you kind of get an inkling of who, you know, what he's capable of if he's pushed, if he really needs to do something, you know, and that he.
I would definitely want to revisit his world just to see what else, you know, expand his world, certainly. But I think that's probably a good thing for the podcast. What film would you watch again? I think it's probably a fair thing to say that you have to watch all four films at some point. But yeah, what ones would you want to revisit? That's completely up to you. But you know, I think, like I say, I don't think I'll be watching The Giant Claw again. But if it ever comes up, I'll always think of you, Bob. Definitely. I think they're a great quad of films to chat about, mate. Definitely.
Well, I hope if we've got anyone still listening at this point as we wind things up for hopefully the first of many episodes.
Yeah.
I don't know. Depends how many dozens of people we can get to listen to it.
Well,
thousands of people. Sorry.
Thousands,
sorry,
I
misread the line in the script there you gave me. Sorry. I said the idea, watch it yourself. I mean, you know, Giant Claw means something to me, doesn't mean anything to you, whatever, blah, blah, blah. Hunt these films down. I know some of them are not easy to find. I understand that. This is not a case of... I think we mentioned this in another podcast about some people will, if they're into, say, computer games, they will pick a very, very obscure computer game and lord it to the heavens. Look what this is. It's a gem everyone has missed. Look at it. Look how clever I am. I've discovered its capabilities. I'm the one. Everyone agree with me. Come. Play the game I say is brilliant. And you get that with films. I mean, you know, you will find people will go, oh, yeah, you want to watch this obscure silent film from 1925 or whatever, this film noir, because it predates. And look what I've written about it. Look what I've discovered. You know, this is my interpretation. It's not that. I'm not picking these films. Yes, they are difficult to find, some of them. I agree. And I'm not picking them just to say, look how clever. You know, please, if you can, you know, they are out there. I said 12:01, you can get on a DVD collection. I've seen it on eBay a couple of times in a collection. He Never Died. I got my copy from HMV, I think it was. Woke Up Early the Day I Died. Might be a bit more difficult. I can't remember where I got that from. That was online. The Giant Claw, you can get in a lovely Blu-ray copy, Sam Katzman, four films of Sam Katzman, including Giant Claw, loaded with extras. I've got the DVD box set. You've got the Giant Claw, Zombies of Moritau, The Werewolf, and another one. But you can get it, I think, who's doing it? I think, is it Arrow? I think Arrow might be doing it. There's a box set. It's out there. You probably could pick it up. They're having a sale at the moment, Arrow. Yeah.
Not sponsored by Arrow yet, but
sponsored, but if Arrow are listening, you know, and you want to send us some free samples, please do. Also Powerhouse, if you're out there, you know, other great film DVD Blu-ray companies are available, as they always say on the BBC.
Absolutely. You've got to be even-handed about these things.
Please make up your own mind. Watch these films. If they're rubbish, fair enough, they're rubbish. You've only wasted 90 minutes of your life, you know. I don't think you will. I think you will find, you know, some of them.
There's a takeaway. Yeah, there's a takeaway from all of them. So it's, but you know, the mission is, it's the curious, forgotten, and the unusual in film and video that we're covering, Bob.
It certainly is.
And we'll wrap up and say that you've been Bob Pape and I've been Carlos. Until next time,
and another collection. Hopefully, we'll theme it. See if we can get some kind of theme going, running through these casts. And but I'll try and guarantee they are unusual and different. You may have seen some of them before. It depends who I'm talking to, who we're talking to, isn't it? At the end of the day, if you're a film fan or a film virgin.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll consider my cherry well and truly popped on these. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Carl. Cheers, then. That's
excellent. Thank you. Cheers for that.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye. And that was Bob Pape's Deadlights, hosted by Bob Pape and myself, Carlos. If you like what you listen to, by all means drop us a message at TeletextR or on the Discord with your film tips or your reviews, or let us know if you've actually seen any of those titles that we discussed in today's show. Bite High No Limit is obviously a podcast about all different forms of technology, and the Bob Pape episode is a perfect fit into the stable. So if you would like to show your appreciation by perhaps sharing the episode or rating it or liking it or telling a friend, that'd be enormously brilliant. Also, if you feel that way inclined, you can donate towards the cost of hosting the podcast. It's on Podbean. That just costs a few quid a year to run, but it is a hobby, so that's really down to you guys. You can get that on ko-fee.com/bitehigh, and you could make a one-off or whatever you like, really. That's completely up to you. I hope you enjoyed listening to that as much as we did making it. So until next time, keep it blocky.
You're still here? It's over. Go home. Go.